Morning, everyone. It is our second Module 10 call at 8 a.m. on the 31st of August. Autumn is literally banging on our door, which is very exciting for some of us. This is our last curriculum call. I can't quite believe we're here. I don't know about you. So you may have felt like, you may be feeling a bit like, what the hell just happened? And can we really be here? And that's totally okay. I think I've said before that really you can stay connected to me and to this work for as long as you wish to, for as long as you you feel you need to. And I'll talk more next week's call. We're going to talk about certification. I'm going to introduce you to the concept of self-belief coach match, where I can potentially connect you with coaching clients and kind of how the process moves on from here, from this curriculum part of the process. But yeah, so just know that even if you're feeling a bit like, well, that's been a bit of a whirlwind, please don't think that we're going to leave you hanging. Like, you're going to be so well supported as you move into integrating these tools and working with your people and figuring out how self-belief coaching gets incorporated into the work that you are doing or that you wish to do. So just want to put a little bit of reassurance on the table there. Okay, so I'm just going to share my screen. So this module is all about our clients' goals and dreams. How do we coach with those? How do we help them bring them to life? And today we're just going to revisit again the aims of this module. We're going to revisit courage-based goals and plans and action, see how you got on, whether you managed to create one. I can see behind Kate that she's got what looks like a courage-based goal up on a notice board, which is fab. And here comes Janelle. So you may or may not have had a chance to start that process or to just start to play with it. So we'll talk a little bit about that and check in with any questions you have around that. And then in the second half of the call, we'll be talking about sort of this concept of a change cycle of how humans change behaviour and kind of bringing the program together, what you can do to put together a package of coaching sessions for your clients, but also any other questions that you might have about anything to do with the program. So a nice interactive call, I hope. Okay, so just wanting to revisit this concept of courage-based goals, plans, and action is that it's based on the premise that there is no ideal, right, or linear way to achieve a goal. That when we do our best work as trained self-belief coaches, we do our best work when we help our clients feel resourced, when setbacks and challenges and self-doubt inevitably comes up. So the whole idea is to support our clients to see that these are opportunities for them to know themselves and to overcome these obstacles. And this means that the meta purpose of achieving any goal, realizing any dream, is actually about the expansion of the client's self-concept. Right, that it's not really the destination of the goal or the dream that matters, but who you become along the way. Right? What do you learn about yourself? What can you do now that you couldn't before? Who do you become? You become the person who doesn't flake on themselves, who keeps promises to themselves, the person who just figures shit out, even when it's hard. Right? And what happens as a result of that, and you may have started to notice this if you've been playing with these concepts, is that the voices of those protectors, the martyr, the critic, the bystander, the scapegoat, they start to decrease a little bit. They start to no longer be the automatic responses to any kind of action that you need to take. So we have this sort of three-stage process. We help the client create a goal, which is all about really tapping into, like, what's possible? You know, what is, why now, and what will this mean to the client? And we did this last week in class. But also taking a quite a balanced and realist perspective here, what won't change? Like what's going to be constant, even if you achieve this goal beyond your wildest dreams? And what might change? What is possible for you? So you help the client to see that not everything is at stake, right? And then putting together a courage-based plan, which is non-linear and just focused on taking actions that you feel enough courage to take on any particular day and getting into a momentous rhythm of taking that action. So the action happens on a pretty regular basis. You reward yourself. You start to play with the plan so it becomes a living, breathing thing. It's not just a static document. So some tasks that may feel quite risky at the start become just, they kind of dip down into maybe they don't feel as risky anymore after you've had a month or so's progress under your belt. Whatever feels easy, suddenly it's like, oh no, I know how I'm going to do that. And it becomes doable. So you figure those things out. And it means that your literal comfort zone expands, right? So one of the concepts that I love is this idea that life happens inside the comfort zone, right? It's just a load of rubbish that we have to completely dysregulate our nervous systems and get into a place of, feeling really risk, filled with risk, filled with anticipatory energy where it's really scary to take action. Like what I have found and what is super healthy is that when you are taking action from within a comfort zone, you're much more able to access your healthy adult self. Right? You're much more access to be in a place of regulation, co-regulation with your body, to not feel like everything's at stake, to keep that kind of realist. Let's just see what can happen here. What's the smallest, most doable step I can take? Great question, Helen. What's the difference between easy and doable? Doable is doable. You could do it straight away. No worries. It feels completely within your capability, within your capacity, and there is no like resistance at all. An easy task is something where you know what to do, but you have some resistance to it. So it might be, I've got to send an email to ask for a meeting, but I know what to do. That's an easy task, but I have some resistance to doing that because I'm not sure how it's going to be received, right? Does that kind of make sense, Helen? Yeah, cool, awesome. So I'm just curious to know, I'm just gonna stop the share here. Curious to know, how did you get on with putting your courage-based plans together? Did you like this concept? Did you have a go at it? Where are we at? Please feel free to raise your hand if you wanna share anything. Yeah, Janelle.
I really like the non-linear way of thinking about it, Sass.
Yeah.
And it's almost a good way to capture all of the things that you've got in your head that you need to do as well. So it served a couple of purposes around capturing and categorizing. But I liked the idea of if something felt too hard, it wasn't first this, then that. You could go, that doesn't feel like me today. I can try something else. So I really liked the usability of it, I think is the word I would use for lots of people, because it wasn't until we started talking about it last week that I really reflected on how many people don't like goals. And part of that was coming from the fact that from a corporate sense in my day job, we're right in the middle of goal setting for the year. So there's been lots of talk about it, and it's been really interesting to have the way we do it in corporate versus this model as two things to compare and contrast.
Yeah, love that. Yeah, I've certainly found that myself. I do still have the occasional nightmare from the HR sausage machine of putting a KPI thing together and all of that jazz. I think it can be quite quite wounding for some people about, have you met your goal? And we're very good in corporate settings, I think, to hold the individual responsible for quite a lot when there's quite a lot that's outside of their scope of influence. So yeah, totally get that. So I'm so glad that you had the opportunity to just play with it and see what you think.
It felt creative, I think is the word that I would use, to just be able to put all the things down.
Magic.
Not that mine looked as impressive as Kate's on social media. I tell you, I looked at it and went, hello.
I was seeing Kate's and I was seeing seeing Helen's in the background as well. It was fantastic. Oh, so I wonder if Kate or Helen, do you want to just share like what the process was like for you to just put that together, how that felt for you? Yeah, Kate.
Yeah, I found it so similar to what Janelle was saying. I'm so used to doing the linear process in corporate. And so it was really joyful to do it this way. And just being able to decouple the this, then that process was really nice. I found that although I put quite a lot on there, there was an awful lot of passive stuff in the middle. And that became very apparent once it was in the circles. And so I just keep going back to it every now and again and swapping a few things around, and it's bringing up quite a lot. It's good.
Yeah, I love that. And I think there is something like there's a real purpose that passive action serves. And for anyone who hasn't kind of got to that place in the module yet, passive action is just something that doesn't require anything of you. So if your goal is to climb Everest, a passive action would be to read lots of memoirs from people who've climbed Everest, right? So you're kind of connecting to your goal, but it's not requiring anything of you. Often there's a level of consumption with passive action. But it's a great way to sometimes just get inspired, to learn, to feel motivated and kind of tap into some energy that will help you to take more meaningful action. So I always kind of say, aim for sort of like a 30-70 or a 20-80 split between passive and meaningful action. And I think it's perfect that is also sitting in the center, okay, because it really is the doable stuff, right? It is the things that we sort of feel like, oh, I could do that. And also don't underestimate how great passive action, particularly consuming and anything that can help you feel inspired. Like I think sometimes that can break a pattern of just feeling a bit meh, or when you sort of lose the spark, or you're a bit feeling a bit kind of like the whole thing is becoming a bit tedious. I think sometimes get going back into, well, who's done this before and how do I get motivated to do this? Passive action can be a great way to just kind of kickstart our enthusiasm again. So yeah, I'm so glad you found it joyful, Kate. That's a great thing. And Helen, do you want to share?
How did I find it? Well, I did some really perfect circles, which was really gratifying, as I wondered whether or not I would ever get anything on it. And over the week, every time a thought comes to me, I write it on one of my little post-its and stick it on there. So it's kind of it's still a work in process. There's some stuff on it I've done. So I wrote them down and then I did it. So that was kind of quite good. So I've started to write some content, and I can't remember what else. Oh, and I have a web domain and an email address in my thingy bob name. So I've done a few things, so that feels quite good. But yeah, as you know, it's a challenge just even thinking about the things. All the things. I've got a few things.
Yeah,
I think I need to move them around. I think in the module book you've got easy and doable, different to how you just described them the other way
around. Okay. Apologies. Yeah, something in the center that's the easiest thing to do.
Okay.
So
that's why I got confused, because I think apologies. In my course notes last week you described it as you did today, and in the book it describes it the other way around, and I'm like, hang on, maybe I wrote it down wrong.
Yeah,
no, so it's fine. So I probably need to swap my doables and easy round, but other than that I think it's kind of coming together.
Good. And are you rewarding yourself for taking action?
Oh, of course I am. I'm rewarding myself by avoiding it as much as possible.
So it could be that actually rewarding yourself can bring a little bit more fun into it.
Mm.
If it starts to feel a bit like, oh, there's so much, you know, there's so much to do, or there's a lot riding on this, I think, you know, making your rewards fun, doing it with other people, like you may want to get together with other folks who are doing a similar type. A lot of you were talking in last week's call about setting up your practice. So you may want to get together with, you know, as a group and support each other.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, there's totally room to do that. So we had a group last year in the last class called the Creation Station, and they all were wanting to set up group programs for the first time. And so, you know, three or four programs have come out of that, which is amazing. So it can be really fun just to get together and do it and have that supportive accountability. I think part of this process can be, and I guess one of the things that's kind of hard to resolve is that it can feel a bit lonely when we're bringing our dreams and goals together. So doing this in a group, having a coach for our clients, having a coach to be able to celebrate with and to, you know, get some support when things don't go great, can be really helpful just to keep that momentum going.
Mm. I think for me, considering where I was last week, where I couldn't even think about anything, the fact that it's got something on it. I mean, I drew the circles really quickly because I thought I could do that. Yes. But
my doable task.
And they are perfect circles, by the way. Although I don't think the center's quite right, which is a bit annoying. However, I've actually got some sticky notes on it, and that is a major achievement. So I'm feeling great.
It exists, right? Your plan exists, which really means your dream exists. You're kind of acknowledging that to yourself, and every time you put a little bit of energy into it, you're getting to remind yourself, this really matters to me. I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Amazing. Nice. Anyone else want to share anything about their experience of putting together a plan? Anyone got any questions about it?
I also really, really like the model, and it's really helpful. And I can really see how you can grow as you move through it with your courageousness. The bit I think I'm still struggling with, I notice a lot in myself, is defining between when I'm resisting and when there's a bit of me that's the healthy self-resistance. And I just wondered if you could say maybe a little bit more about any tips around that when I'm using the model, because, for example, I can still feel quite a lot of healthy self-resistance around the aloneness of the work. You know, the sort of self-entrepreneur just doing it by yourself, pushing on through. And some of that is just plain resistance to stepping in. Some of it is actually, I think, healthy self going, actually, you know, I think maybe you would like to work with other people more, your energy could be shared, that kind of thing.
Beautiful question. So I think you've kind of answered this for yourself, Catherine, in that when it's resistance from the protector, it's about risk. So you can usually answer that by, am I afraid of anything? Am I worried about something? And that will usually be shared. Like, you kind of consult with your protector. What are you concerned about here? What have you got to say about what this resistance is about? Whereas when it's your healthy self, that part of you is usually going to offer solutions. They're going to offer like suggestions. Right? So it's kind of things to think about rather than reasons to not do it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So it sounds like, you know, there is this general kind of a little bit of tension for you around the aloneness of being self-employed. And it may show up from a protector perspective as reasons not to move forward and all of that jazz. But it sounds like your healthy self is saying, yeah, you know, you actually like working with other people, or, you know, share, you know, collaborating, sharing, you know, how could you do that? So what usually happens is when it's your healthy self, you get more stuff on your plan, right? Whereas the protector tends to want to take things away or stop you from doing things, is the general sort of rule.
Okay. Yeah, that's useful.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that last bit made sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So your healthy self is offering you some, you know, to get back in touch with your values, the things that bring you alive. How can you do this in a way that actually makes you feel good? And that's potentially adding tasks to your plan, right? Who could I collaborate with? Do I just need to go and have a co-working space somewhere to be surrounded by some humans for a day a week or something? You know, what is that? What could that look like? And it's going to offer you some ways to experiment with the solution.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Cool. Any other questions from people or just wanting to share your experience or anything else that's coming up?
I always feel like when I have a different experience to everyone else that it's, I feel compelled to share it just in case anyone else is also like, I didn't find it joyful.
Cool. You're the maverick. I love it. Yeah. Share away. You didn't find it joyful.
No, I find goal setting quite tricky in general. And like, I have an understanding of why that is, but basically I was really excited after our call on Tuesday and I did like big massive action on Tuesday. And then it's my brain went, cool, we're done now. Like, we don't have to do anything else. Like, that was so hard. So like, we'll just not do anything else.
Right. So where are you at with it now?
Well, I was like, oh, I really should show up to this call with it done. And so I was going to cram it all in before the 11 a.m. call. And then I woke up at like 7:30 and I was like, just go to the 8 a.m. call with it undone. Like, just
amazing.
So that's where I am.
So is this your, like, I'm just curious about how you tend to get things done generally.
Impulsively and in bursts.
Yeah. Yeah. And does that work for you?
To an extent, it works really good at keeping me in the middle ground. Like, I have success that I can be like, cool, I did stuff and it's working great. And then I tell myself, and I don't know how much this is true, that the thing stopping me from reaching the next level is that I don't like make plans and I don't have goals and I don't follow through with anything.
Yeah. And is that true?
I don't know. I don't know how to find out if that's true or not.
What could you do?
Well, I feel like I could make a plan and follow through, but then if I find out it's not true, I don't want to deal with that.
There's your answer.
Yeah. I would really like it to be true that the thing that's stopping me is that I don't make a plan and follow through with it. But if I make a plan and follow through and it fails, I don't want to deal with that.
Tell me about it failing. What would need to happen for it to fail?
I think I would be disappointed. Yeah. My biggest fear is that if I launch my program and like, what if no one buys? Like, I'm like, cool, that's end of the road.
Right. So great to like just acknowledge that. There's a part of you that's worried that you're going to put all your energy and love into this and no one's going to want it.
Hmm.
And so that part needs to kind of be tended to a little bit, right? Like, okay, that's a real fear. And then I think once you can acknowledge that and just feel that, like that's a totally natural and understandable feeling to have, then it becomes a case of, so what could I do to try and reduce the risk of that happening? Right, and I'm off the top of my head, I'm thinking, because obviously, you know, I totally share this fear and risk as well. But it's things like, okay, how can I explain the value of this to the person who I want to be here? Like, am I really clear about why this would help you? And does that matter to those people? And it's like you start to get, then it becomes more about solving those challenges, right? Facing the setbacks, the challenges, the what have you. You know, what do I need to believe myself about this work? You know, how can I show up to this, assuming that I'm going to have 6, 10, 12, 20, 30 people in this program?
Okay, that feels like a very expansive question, because I was like, I just want 3.
Perfect. Yeah.
But the idea of like, what if I assume that like, the, you know, 20, 30 people.
Well, whatever the number is for you. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I play like really, really small, because I'm like, I could never find 30. Like that's.
Well, and if remember, right, like if you think about, oops, where's my pen? You think about the belief buster. Like the circumstance, the kind of context we're playing at is your marketing, your course. And the belief that you have at the moment is I can't find more than 3 people.
Mm.
How does that feel to you?
Well, it feels self-defeating.
Completely. I love how in touch you are here, Shirley. Self-defeating. Yeah, it's like I'm already disappointed, right? I'm already disappointed because I bet you it's going to cost you way more than that to put the program together for these 3 people.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, I'm going to be burnt out because I put all my time and energy and giving everything, and like 3 people show up, and then I'm like, oh, cool, that was not worth it. Yeah.
And so when you are feeling self-defeated, how do you tend to show up? How do you behave? What action do you take?
I don't do anything. Like I take a lot of time off. I'm like, oh, well, just, I can't put anything onto my calendar.
Yeah. Because you're preserving your energy because you're burnt out from doing it for these people.
Yes, I'm preemptively burnt out. And so I'm just like, cool, we're not doing anything.
Doesn't that make total sense, even though it's not working for you?
Yeah. And then this is why I don't even do the goals, because I'm like, it's like in my head, I'm like, oh, cool, the goal leads to burnt out. And
Yeah. What's the outcome of all of this? Can't find more than 3 people. I feel self-defeated. So I take a lot of time off doing nothing, preemptively plan for burnout. What's the outcome?
Outcome is I feel really rubbish.
Yeah. Say more.
I use it as evidence that this is all I get in life.
Oh my goodness. Did you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
This is evidence that this is all I get. So that risk that you so beautifully tuned into, I can never spell disappointment, so I know it's got too many P's and too many S's, but just bear with me. You're already disappointed.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about your ability to be with disappointment.
That is true. That's very
true. You really don't need to worry about that. You can be with that.
Yeah.
Your willingness to go all in and be disappointed is going to be the best thing you could do for yourself.
Yeah.
So my sense is, Jolie, that actually your natural resistance to this process, which I just so love that you put your hand up, because everyone is going, ooh, this is juicy, right? Is when it's all going smoothly, it's like, cool. When someone says, nah, this didn't work, you actually get to expand and learn and grow. I think you need a much bigger goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want you to do this in a way that supports you. So all of these actions are all about, like, it's going to be too much. Right. So I'm sensing quite a bit of like a scapegoat protector in there. It's going to be too much. It's going to be too hard. So I just got to kind of almost do nothing. And that would be, that's the safest thing.
Yeah.
And if you put your big, beautiful brain and heart into creating something that is actually for 12 people, for six people, whatever number, I mean, doubling it to six is amazing, right? And it's like, why is that amazing? You know?
Yeah.
Picture those six people, the intimacy, the one-on-one time, the fact that they're going to get to know each other. You know, you have all of these amazing new tools and resources to be able to play with. Like, this could be so fun for them. However you decide to kind of pull this together. But as soon as you get into, oh, I can't wait to meet these six people. You know, I'm always going to deliver for them. They're going to get exactly what they need. Come up with a list of all the beliefs that would really support you to show up fully.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're totally willing to feel disappointment because you're already feeling it.
I think that's a good reminder. And that's totally true, because I've had a group coaching program for the past 6 months and I've showed up every week for them, for those two people. But also there is that story of like, oh my God, if I have like 12 people, I just won't be able to show up. But it's like, it's no different than showing up once a week for two people. I just get paid more.
Yeah. And you may want, it may or may not be a money thing, right? Like you may have a, because this outcome, it's evidence that this is all I get. Like that belief may also be tied in here. So that might be one to play with or to get coached on in a practice pod.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like your potential is completely unlimited because there isn't anyone saying this is what you earn this year.
Mm-hmm.
Go reach these goals. Good luck. The corporate machine is with you. Your potential is unlimited. You can literally decide what you want to make and then figure out who do I need to be to bring that income in. Balancing it off with the work-life balance, with having time to just read and to get paid for your writing now, like the goal you mentioned last week. You know, you can just play with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Knowing there's going to be setbacks and disappointments, but you're already doing that to yourself, right?
Yeah. I actually think that's the biggest reminder for me right now of like, yeah, I'm really good at sitting in the disappointment. I've done this for a long time.
Yeah. And it's a great thing to just recognize, folks, if you're working through your own like thoughts and beliefs around a particular goal that you have, just do the really courageous thing that Jolie's just done of what am I actually worried about here? What am I believing around this? And how is that just creating the outcome? What we can do is give our clients the job of fixing that. Right, we kind of go, well, if the context was 12 people bought my course,
yeah,
right, then but then what you would find is that you just get another version of the same energetic temperature of whatever the core belief is. So it's whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm.
So if the belief is this is all I get, evidence that this is all I get, if that's kind of underneath all of this, even if you have 12 people that show up and you haven't sort of really reconciled with that or come to sort of understand that and compassionately kind of look at it, you'll find another version of that shows up no matter what the number is.
Yeah. No, that I know for sure. I found an Instagram post from like 6 years ago where I said something like, every month I'm like surprised, like I'm waiting every month for clients to disappear. Cause I've been working with like a service base for a while. And I was like, oh wow. For 6 years, I have been waiting for the day that I just don't make any more money tomorrow. And I'm like, 6 years is a lot of evidence that money comes in tomorrow. But my brain's like, no, maybe it won't this time.
So that's a really common, belief that we have, like this is all going to turn to shit tomorrow, right? So anyone who's kind of in a bit of an earlier process where you're setting up your practice and you think, well, once I get this up and running and it's a bit sustainable, then I'll be free of all my crappy beliefs. No, no, no. What happens is you then get this other flavor that, you know, Jolie's sharing. This is all going to turn to shit tomorrow, right? So we'll figure out a way to still protect ourselves from the risk. And so another, it's about now shifting. You've acknowledged you have 6 years of evidence. It's highly unlikely that this is going to end tomorrow because it hasn't for 6 years.
Mm.
And what's a more healthy belief you could think, right? And then you come up with those, right? I've just started, I really love Canva, and I use that quite a lot for social media, but you can create like desktop wallpapers, and I'm on a monthly basis now, I'm just creating like the 3 top beliefs I really want to like play with that month, and that's the wallpaper on my phone, on my desktop, and I'm thinking it and seeing it all the time. Like, oh yeah, you know, it is so helpful for me to believe every coach needs SBCA.
Yeah,
like that's just a great belief for me to have, right? So you find your version of that so that it supports you to show up in a way that just feels good to you. Amazing.
Yeah, cool.
How does that feel?
It feels like a good reminder of like, it's safe for me to dream big, because the worst that happens is I'm just right where I am and I'm already there. So let's exactly. just try something else.
And I think that's the thing. The plan does not replace your beliefs. It supports them.
Yeah.
So whether you do a plan or not, right, it's going to help you to, it's designed to help you. But whether you do it or not, it's not going to impact the reality of what you're dealing with. But it can be a great way to enhance it,
mm-hmm.
to expand your self-concept, because then you've got a written record. Yeah. Amazing.
Cool.
Thanks, Jolie. That was beautiful. Great share. Okie doke. So I just wanted to just spend a little bit of time just talking about the Prochaska and De Clemente's model of behavioral change. And what you'll find in the module is that I talk about like the different stages of your coaching practice and kind of what to share, right? So before clients work with us, they're in that contemplation stage or pre-contemplation stage where they kind of either have pre-contemplation as I've got no intention of changing my behavior, right? It's like, this is my life and this is how it is. And contemplation is, oh, I'm aware there is a problem or some kind of misalignment or disquiet in my brain. I know there is a problem, but I don't have any commitment to really change it. I don't really know how to change it is what I found. And so in that those two stages, this is where we're sharing, this is why we share stuff on social media, why we send out newsletters, why we have that contact with folks. It's like, hey, I could help with that problem that you have. Here's how I show up to help people. And when people go, oh, this is now a thing I have, then they know who to turn to. Right, they may search for you, and then you've got your body of work on social media so they can see it. And then people move into preparation where they're curious about getting some help, right? And we're going to just assume they're curious about coaching. They could also be curious about other things, but from our perspective, we can't control that. So they are at preparation stage, intent on taking action to address the problem. And so this is why we have to keep making offers. This is why we keep saying to people, hey, I'm a coach. This is what I do. This is who I help. Do you want to have a chat about it? This is why we keep inviting people, so that when folks do search for someone who can help with their problem, help with their challenge, they come across you. And they don't just come across you, they come across you having shown up consistently for a while, so they can see, oh, you know where I'm at. It can really help when I think about folks who are in that pre-contemplation to preparation stage of kind of how we change. For me, it's like, that's why I keep showing up, even when no one cares, right? That's why I keep showing up and sharing what I've got, even when it doesn't result in someone buying from me, right? It's like my business, both literally and figuratively, is to keep showing up. So that when my dear client decides, yeah, I am ready to do this, and they search for the thing that they're looking for, or they ask for recommendations, they find out about me. That's going to be way more likely if they are, if I have been showing up consistently. And I know we can say, oh God, there's a billion people on Instagram. There is, you know, squillions of websites. Having been a blogger since 2005, so I've been on the internet since it was born, I can tell you that it's not that big a place. People will find you if you keep showing up, if you keep sharing your work, if there is a real alignment between you, your website, your social media, however you want to show up, or just the way that you are communicating with clients. People know that this is the work you do. So this is why our own self-belief is so important when it comes to helping other people make changes. Right? When we show up totally believing in what we're doing, sending out consistent messages, being very committed to a flavor of coaching, no matter what that is, that's how people will keep finding us. And in that place of preparation and moving to action, moving to maintenance, moving to relapse, right? So these last, the last half of the spiral, they are a coaching client, right? They're taking action. Active modification of behavior is how Prochaska and De Clemente phrase it. Sustained change, new behavior replaces old. What happens between preparation, action, and maintenance is coaching, right? Is our coaching. So this is when we are working with a client to figure out why they haven't been able to make these changes before. What flavor of self-doubt is holding them back? Who they are underneath that? What they can do? How they can put a plan in place, exploring who they are, making peace with, you know, the parts of them that they may not absolutely love, and really owning their self-trust, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-belief. As they start to do that over a course of working with a coach, that's when they start to expand their self-concept. They're doing new things. They're believing new things about themselves. They're experimenting wildly. And at some point, either within that that stage or afterwards, they'll what they call relapse. And I know the language isn't great here, but they'll fall back into old patterns of behavior. They'll get a setback of some sort. And so that's where, you know, our work is so helpful, because we are trained and skilled and we know how to help people make sense of their relapses, how to make sense of when you're doing the things that you don't actually want to be doing, trusting that nothing's gone wrong, there's a good reason for it, and we can help you. The reason that I've included this particular model is that it is so well respected in a ton of different contexts for behavioral change. And it is pretty neutral about how change happens in terms of, the research is, I think, quite inclusive and respectful. It's not, it is a 1980s approach, but it has been added to and developed, widely used in social health type contexts. So it has a really, really good history and a wide usage to be able to show us that this is really how people change behavior. And I think it's so helpful for us as coaches to think, okay, so if someone's in that preparation stage, what kind of tools can I use with them? right? They want to take some action. They want to address the problem. The best thing I can do is help them uncover the protective beliefs that have helped them, that have held them back in the past. Right? I can help them understand their life map, using their life map. I can use the meaning-making map to figure out, like, what are they making sense of here? So in the module workbook, I've sort of mapped all the SBCA tools to this model. So you can kind of see, like, what might be helpful. It's not a rule of thumb, but it's designed to just support you to put together a package of coaching for a client who, in whatever context, feels they're being held back by their self-doubt, right? So they could be, it could be about moving to the next stage in their career as an employee. It could be about changing careers. It could be about getting more work-life balance. Right, it could be about creative pursuits, relationships, any number of things. This is applicable to everybody. But the idea is that you have a way to map the tools to create a package for your particular clients. Okay. So, and it seemed appropriate to do this kind of at the end where you can see, oh, that's the kind of way that we could use the tools, right? And you might find that for some clients, you use one or two tools again and again because they love them and it becomes a way of being able to make sense of their world and understand how their brain's working, right? So there's no like complete rule here, but if you do like to have a kind of structure to your sessions, that's the approach that I would recommend. All right. So I just want to offer some time for any of your questions, queries, concerns, anything that's come up for you that you just want to like riff on or ask about. Feel free to stick your hand up and we will take it from there. And if there's no questions, that's totally fine. Okay. Hello.
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 We might cover this next week, I think, but I just remember you saying that you meet up after the course with former students. Is that part of the accreditation or is that something you offer just generally as a post-course thing?
It's something I offer generally. So once a month, we have a call. And at the moment, it's at 5 p.m. on the last Thursday of the month, which I appreciate for those of you in the Southern Hemisphere isn't great. But we are looking at maybe doing this with Scott running one at another time frame because he's based in California. So at the moment, there's one call a month, but that is designed to, and we always share the recording, that is designed to be a kind of group supervision slash answering questions slash getting coaching type experience. You can ask to be coached. So you can just say, when I send the email out, I always say, if you know you're going to want coaching or support, please just let me know. And then you get the priority. And that is a 60 to 90 minute call. And it's designed to support you to integrate these tools in your practice. And as you are experiencing the setbacks and the challenges and the, what does this mean? Or I've got a specific client that is challenging me on in these ways. How can I respond from my healthy self? We talk about that. So it can be something to do with your coaching clients. It can be something to do with you personally. And it can be something to do with, you know, bringing this work to life in your business. Great. Basically, everything's on the table. Yeah. Does that help you, Helen?
Yeah, no, that's great. That's really clarified it. Thank you.
Awesome. And yeah, we will talk about that a bit more next week. Anyone else got any questions? Yeah, Catherine.
I was just wondering about your sense of the balance between, say, offering a discovery morning and how your tools sit with kind of getting depth from the client in order to really make a difference to their self-belief. So, sorry, I'm not expressing it very well, but it's just kind of like, obviously a lot of these tools, having proper insight into the clients, what they're struggling with, their protector and stuff is key. But there's something that kind of really engages me with about trying to sort of spend a more lighthearted morning with them. And I just wondered what your sense was about that balance.
Yeah, I love that idea. So it sounds like, tell me where I'm wrong, it sounds like you've got an idea for a morning that you want to spend with clients, and you're just concerned that, well, that what will they get from that? Will that be enough or something?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not expressing it terribly well, but okay. It is basically like that. And I'm kind of just, I'm sort of trying to think, you know, about meaning and purpose work, and maybe integrating, obviously, some of the self-belief work. But yeah, just wondering about what becomes just pure delivery to them and what becomes any change, morning.
So a couple of things I would offer. One is to really look at where you might be trying to rescue a client, right? So just being aware of your own sense of entanglement with what they take away from it. And that's the kind of protectory side of things, right? Just to come back to your early question about when is it healthy self, when is it protected? Mm-hmm. To just kind of notice that for yourself. Where do I maybe try to over-deliver, or am I kind of solving for the client in the way that I show up? But from the healthy self perspective, I think just going into what would be really spacious and like you use the word lighthearted, like maybe come up with some intentions for yourself about what you want that morning to look and feel like. And then from there, from that kind of sovereign intention, build out something that feels good to you.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you some context for this, for a couple of years, I ran a one-day workshop where I did the life map, the heart map, and another exercise we called the soul map that I haven't talked about in SBCA. And we did those over a day. So we did three tools over a day. It was really spacious. There were quite big groups of sort of 20 to 30 people sometimes. So it meant that there was lots of like them talking and chatting together. So slightly different situation. But so that's just something to think about. Like I just did three tools over one day. So I think the key is like almost under deliver in terms of the amount of content you go through, because that means that you're responding a bit more to the client and what they bring. And when I have run like small groups or one-to-one sessions that have been live and in person, and I used to do this where someone would just come and spend like the morning with me and then I'd cook them lunch because it just, that was the thing I wanted to do at the time. And I found that it's the prep beforehand that really makes that. So what are the questions you need to ask to find out more about the client? So you kind of already know them before they arrive on the doorstep, about what they're looking for, what are the main sort of sources of challenge in their life right now, what does a great morning look like to them, how do they want to feel when they walk out the door? Asking, you know, a dozen questions to really kind of help them get into the spirit of what does that look and feel like can be super helpful so that you can prepare.
Yeah.
And you could even, you know, one of the ways you can market this is to say, I will tailor our morning for you, knowing that you've got this, you know, your own experience and history as a coach, Catherine, you've got so many tools and ways you can work with people. Like you've got an enormous toolbox. It's like, this is a selling point for your clients. Right. Mm. And it could be like, you know, is there even asking the question, like, what are you just not good at? You know?
What are you not great at doing? For some, you get, I think the broader the questions, you get the most interesting answers. I had one woman who came and spent the day with the half day with me for lunch, And what we did at the start was, she said, I just feel like I have no relationship with my body at all. And so we actually spent the first like half of the morning really exploring her body compass, right? The tool that we talk about in the SAGE aspect of the compass, which is something I learned from Martha Beck. And I know you're trained in there as well. And for her, that was just life-changing. It was like, oh my God, my body is not just this thing I judge. It's actually got a shit ton of wisdom to share with me. It, for her, that was like, this is brilliant. So you could go into that kind of depth using one tool that's all about, you know, where your client is sitting in their life right now.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you.
I hope it's just helpful to share some practical examples, because yeah. I totally understand that sometimes that can be like, but what do you do in that time? Yeah.
I think I can get over serious and over worried about delivery. So that's really helpful.
Well, and I love that your inclination is, I want a light-hearted morning, and yet you're kind of aware, oh, but I've got the serious side that wants to come in and over-deliver. It's like a great experiment for you as well. Mm. Yeah, what does it look like when I show up light-hearted?
Yeah.
So fun. Love it. But also a great way for you to potentially feel less alone, right? You actually just share the day with a person.
That's what I think too. Yeah. No, that's great.
And not a lot of coaches offer in-person stuff. So it can set you apart. If you find a way to be able to talk about that, is a massive plus point.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Very welcome. Great question. Anyone else want to ask? Yeah, Helen.
Might not be able to stop me now. It comes to questions. I can do
that. That's great. We love it.
So I just remembered way back, sorry, I'm going to name check you, Janelle, that one of the things that unlocked her was the use of being able to use velocity session as a word. I remember because we were in the two together, which is why it sticks with me. Is there any kind of issue with using the language that you use yourself? You know, so all the stuff we've got, there's no kind of holes, bars on self-belief and self-doubt and self-trust and all of those. But I can't actually probably think of anything more specific that probably feels much more SaaS flavored.
No, but for sure. Yeah, I completely understand. No, please go ahead. Use whatever feels good to you. There is a couple of just restrictions, just in terms of that it's the intellectual property belongs to me. So it's just about not changing those tools. And they are the courage-based plan, the archetypes model, like to use the ones that you've been distributed with, and they will be updated, by the way, when our new branding comes in, and something else as well, which totally escapes my mind. But if you have a look at the student agreement, which is in the welcome section of the learning site, it's all documented there. And if anything's unclear or you just want to check in, please just email. It's all good. But yeah, you basically have full permission to go crackers.
And if so, one particular client really struggled with the language on the archetypes. So obviously wouldn't change, you know, would still accredit it to you. But are you okay for us to simplify the language?
No, is the short answer. So if someone is struggling with the language, that's an opportunity to say, how do you want to define this for yourself? So was it the name that they were?
No, it was actually more some of the questions in the quiz were kind of like, you know, what does that even mean?
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and some of the language in the booklets, you know, the archetype booklets in, you know, I think possibly developmental stage in terms of language, etc. So, yeah, there was just a few struggles with that.
Feel free to send that feedback back to me, because if it's something that I can use to improve them, I'm super happy to do that. But I'd prefer that you use that as a coaching opportunity to kind of help the person interpret it for themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I did that, but I just thought this might be something that comes up again and again with the nature of some of the clients that I want to work with in the future.
Sure. Feel free to send any feedback you've got through, Helen. It'd be, you know, super helpful to look at that with you.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else got any questions? Pragmatic questions are welcome. General stuff is welcome.
Sorry, this is also a related question. Is there, would you say that there was an age, lower age kind of limit in terms of where you might start with this stuff?
Well, these tools are aimed at adults. So, you know, I don't have an age for an adult, but an adult. A couple of the coaches that came through the first class work specifically with teens and high school students. And Maria has sort of, and this is what I really encourage you to do anyway, is to translate this work for your clients, right? So she's done, you know, a lot of her own work just to figure out, like, how would this work with a teenager, and then how do I explain that to them, right? So for example, and the life map for a teenager is quite short, right? So she always themes it depending on what they come to coaching with. So if it's about bullying, let's look at all the experiences of bullying that you've had through your life, you know, from teasing to what have you, just as a theme I'm thinking about. But how has this shown up? How's this been part of your life? So that she uses that as a sort of vehicle to start the discussions. This is what I encourage is you, and I think someone actually in the feedback forms, which I'm so grateful for, thank you for filling those in, but someone said, you know, there is quite a lot of emphasis on being a self-belief coach, and what about this for our own practices, or something like that. I'm very much paraphrasing. And I interpreted that as, what if I don't want to be a coach match coach, right? What if I just want to use this stuff in my own practice? So whenever I say self-belief coach, please interpret that as, now that I've trained in this curriculum, I'm a trained self-belief coach. You can call yourself whatever you like, of course, right? You could decide, none of these tools work for me. They won't work for my clients. This has been a nice little exercise, but I'm good. And never mention self-belief again. And I am always going to think good things about you. Like, please don't feel obligated to do any of that. But when I say you're a self-belief coach, you are, because you've come through this curriculum and committed to it over the 6 months. You know these tools, you've been practicing with these tools. You might not feel like they're fully integrated yet, or that you completely own them, but that will come in time. That's all good. So you can call yourself whatever you like. But the idea here is that start thinking about, what do my clients need from me? And how can I use these tools to support them? Like, how can I translate this work to support my clients, right? And part of this is that what I've tried to do with all of the tools is keep them as sort of challenge, problem, coaching, question neutral as possible, right? So that it doesn't really matter what a client brings if the underlying way to help them is to look at the meaning making, then the questions in the meaning making map are designed to be completely agnostic of what the client brings. So that's what I'm hoping is that you're taking away from this, is whatever my flavor of coaching is, I can use these tools, or I can find a way to use these tools, right? Some clients love the metaphors that I use of like the sage and the sovereign, the warrior, the lover. If you work in a client group where that is not going to fly, please just use self-trust, self-belief, self-worth, self-acceptance. Like, you know, like, just, it's just common sense stuff here, right? So you just use whatever feels good to you, whatever feels useful for your clients. What I'm hoping you're seeing is that There are no rules. There is no formula. But that what we do by helping our clients make sense of their self-belief, normalizing that, and experimenting with ways that they can bring their inner compass to life, those healthy self-resources to life, that they get to a place where it doesn't actually matter what happens, they are able to feel more resourced. But that's the outcome that we want to get people to. Life is just one damn thing after another. And it's going to keep happening no matter how much self-belief we have. But these tools are designed to help our clients feel more resourced when those things inevitably come up. Okay. Any questions? Katie, are you raising your hand?
I was thinking about it, but seeing as you called me out, I will ask. You might cover this more next week. The one question that I have, like when you were talking about the courses and stuff, is I'm sort of okay with putting stuff together, but it's around the charging. I mean, and obviously I know it would probably be different for all of us in wherever we are and what we're doing, but I'm like, do I charge this much per person? And not because of my self-worth. I believe that I'm worth people paying a lot of money for me, but I'm just not sure what would be out in the market.
I understand. I'll talk about this a bit more next week. And I've also got a tool for you all that Shauna and I put together. It's called the Client Capacitizer because we wanted to call it the Client Capacitizer 2000 because we thought that sounded super modern. But it's basically a spreadsheet. And you just plug in some things and it helps you to get a sense of, look, practically speaking, here's what your hourly rate should be.
Yeah.
I always recommend that for one-on-one coaching, you package it up because it's never an hour, right? You're always thinking about the client before and after. There'll be aftercare and before care work that goes on. Putting a package together, and then it means that you can also talk about the benefits of that. They get that time with you. But we'll share the Client Capacitizer so you can have a play with that, Katie.
Cool.
And I'll talk a bit more about this next week because we're very transparent in terms of like the charge out rates and the booking fee that we take for Coach Match as well, so that will just give you a sense of the numbers we've plucked out of the air. So anyone else have any questions or anything you just want to run past? Okay. So next week we have our call about certification, Coach Match, all other things, which may or may not be a shorter call depending on if you have questions or what have you. And then the week after that we have our closing circle. We need you to do a little bit of preparation for the closing circle. So this Thursday, I'll send out for you a very short reflection process for you to complete over the next couple of weeks. And it just is because everyone gets to speak at the closing circle, and it can be really helpful just to kind of know what to say. Not that we're going to tell you what to say, but that you have some prompts. Otherwise, we'll be here for 4 hours. Okay. I hope that's just helpful just to kind of start to tie it all together a bit, start to think about what your coaching package might look like, and just know that, as you start to implement these tools and, get more of the feedback from clients, and as you're kind of working with this and seeing how it's going to land, you'll definitely have support there for you to start to, really look at what comes up, what are the issues that come up, and how do you want to navigate those? So, yeah. Okay, everyone, thank you so much for today. That was lush. Thank you, Jolly, for being our maverick. That was brilliant. And I hope that was helpful for everybody. If you do have any questions that you just think, I kind of want to ask this, but maybe not in front of a group, please just email. Like, don't hold back. Don't feel like you can't do that at all. Okay. All right, everyone, have a joyous day and I'll see you all next week. Okay, take care, everyone. Bye. Bye.